You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are broadcasting today from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. Right now, you're tuned into The Real World. If you haven't listened before, this is the UBC Film Society's radio segment, and we talk about all things film-related every Wednesday from 4 to 5. And by the way, the Film Society is not just have a radio show. We've got a lot of things going on. You can check out our Instagram, UBC Film Society, where we like post most of the things that we do. We've got like a bunch of screenings every week. We have pub nights, like different socials. This week, we have a beer garden coming up, I believe, on Friday evening. And we're going to be screening Challengers, which I think was audience choice. So yeah, you should come to that. And yeah, keep updated on our website and our Instagram if you want to hear about anything else that we're doing. All right, before we jump into our show today, I'm going to play a couple ads and PSAs, and then we'll be right back for an episode on films about gambling. So we'll be right back.
ZZ Theatre presents the Rainbow Youth Project, produced by Yanting Chu, and curated by Brittany O'Rourke, Alan Pronger, and Bria Shantz. This annual community storytelling project centers the 2S LGBTQ+ voices who often don't get a say in their lives, bodies, and identities. Bringing two-spirit, queer, and trans youth from across Metro Vancouver to share their stories. The Rainbow Storytelling Project is a low-barrier, one-on-one project in which people share true stories from their lives. It is designed to challenge stereotypes and preconceived notions of otherness, promote dialogue, reduce prejudices, and encourage understanding by connecting people who under normal circumstances might never meet. The Rainbow Youth Project will be running on dates November 16th, 17th, the 23rd and 24th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Vancouver Public Library Central Branch on the third floor. This is a free event with no sign-up required. All that is necessary is your attendance and your empathy.
We are UBC Electronica, and we love electronic music such as Run for the Knife. When I step into the genre, I get it. We offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you, this time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress Of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you.
What do you love, and what do you love about it? My name is Ewan, and with I Love You Hour, I want to know. Come join me bi-weekly Tuesdays at 6 p.m. to discuss music and the stories we connect to it, either in person, on the phone, or through messages at I Love You Hour on Instagram. That's ILUVU Hour on Instagram, or through email at ILUVHour@gmail.com. If you love sharing music and telling stories, listen to I Love You Hour bi-weekly at CITR 101.9. And remember, I love you.
All right. Welcome back. Again, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and this is The Real World. Today, for our episode, we are going to be talking about films about gambling. Let's talk about it. So I'd first of all like to welcome our very special guest this week. Emma, unfortunately, is not here, but today in studio I have Gurjot, which is the UBC Film Society's treasurer. Say
yeah.
Hi.
Hello. I embezzle money into the club, and yeah.
That's why we're talking about gambling movies?
Yeah.
Perfect. I guess I actually didn't think about that, why maybe you would have chosen you. So Gurjot chose gambling movies as our topic for this week. As treasurer, why did you want to talk about gambling movies?
Oh, it already paints you bad as a treasurer by putting this, but I promise I don't gamble any of the funds away. I've just always had an interest in, ever since I went to like a hockey tournament when I was like 10 or something, or 11, I don't know. A couple of friends, and we were staying at a hotel, and they invited me to one of their rooms, and they had a whole table set up, and they all had their phones out with calculators, and I'm like, what are we doing? Like, we're playing poker.
Oh.
I'm like, okay. So they're like, okay, put $1,000 on your calculator. I'm like, okay. And ever since then, I fell into gambling. I'm not a gambling addict, I swear, but yeah. It's also, I think you had Fernando on the show. He recommended I do gambling movies because I like Bay of Angels a lot. So I was like, sure, why not? This actually seems kind of up my alley to do this. So,
okay, I love it. It's perfect. And I feel like I got a lot of great recommendations out of this episode. So we're going to be talking about Bay of Angels, California Split, and Hard Eight. And I hadn't seen Bay of Angels or California Split before. Are these something, these are movies that you watched a while ago? Like, have they been favorites for a while?
Bay of Angels, I watched a couple of years ago, and I absolutely fell in love with that movie. So that's the one I've seen. I haven't seen the other two, but I just remember watching Bay of Angels one morning. Like, it was like 2 a.m. in the morning, and I was like, why not just put this on? And then I just slept, and then I just kept thinking about it over and over again. So I was like, yeah, this is a favorite.
Definitely. Yeah. I love it. These are great recommendations. What about, like, gambling movies? Were you drawing connections, like, while you were kind of going back through your rewatches? At least when I was, like, I went back to watch these three, and I was thinking about, like, gambling movies as kind of this, like, little tiny genre, I guess, or, like, niche of movies, and trying to, like, draw connections between, there's kind of some similar archetypes that, like, pop up between them, as well as, like, the setting, at least, like, obviously, they're all kind of taking place with the casino as, like, a backdrop, which I found really interesting, especially in terms of, like, engaging at a character level. Like, we're kind of analyzing very specific individuals and, like, their motivations and stuff, but also the casino as this, like, playground for, like, larger societal, like, issues, like, related to, like, capitalism, all sorts of things, which I really liked.
I like that you mentioned playground. I haven't thought about that before, but casinos sort of do function as an adult playground in a sense, and it's like, it might be depressing in that way. It's like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, gamble my life savings away, or, you know, I need to make some money, but let's go play these what seems like harmless games on the outside, but you're actually, there's this desperation that lurks beneath everything. It's like, okay, I'm going to submit myself to the probabilities of the universe, I guess. And I was actually thinking about this. One thing I like about gambling a lot, and just, like, I guess chance, I was talking with, like, this, I think he was a physics PhD a couple of months ago, and I was like, so what's at the baseline of the universe? He's like, well, we don't really know that yet, but if you go all the way down to the fundamental levels, there's a theory that things everything's sort of determined by a probability or a chance, just the way things move. And it's like, so my whole life is determined by a probability. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of bleak, but I don't know. I'm not a physicist, but that's, I guess, gambling movies are sort of, or gambling in general is, I guess, a larger thing about that.
Yeah, everything coming down to chance.
Yeah.
And, like, what are we risking? I don't know. This is getting too crazy, because then you start thinking about all sorts of universe things. I like it. Jumping right into the universe, fate, free will, all
yeah.
of that. Right at the top of the episode. Anyway, let's start with Bay of Angels.
Yeah.
So, this is a favorite. You have a story with this one. This is 1963, directed and written by Jacques Demy.
Yeah.
I'm going to pronounce a lot of French names right now that I'm not really sure if it's going to be right. And then this has Jackie, Jean, and Caron. I don't really know. He doesn't really become a main character.
Yeah.
He's at the start and you see him again later on. But our main two, Jackie and Jean, are played by Claude Mann and I don't know if you say it, like Jean
Moreau. That's
Jean Moreau.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
So Jean is a clerk in a bank. His colleague introduces him to gambling. And then in the casinos, he meets Jackie and the pair become wrapped up in this gambling and love affair. They clearly have like some sort of like emotions towards each other, but like foundation is like their love for the game. At least that's how I what I drew from it.
They kind of love each other through this addiction in a way. You can look at it that way. But I mean, first of all, like that opening scene is what immediately drew me to that movie, where it's just that score, that beautiful score, and it just zooms out of Jean Moreau, who's the absolute center of that movie.
Yeah.
I think you can't have that movie without Jean Moreau. I was just so taken aback by the opening shot.
I know, I went back to it because once we end up in that same place, like along that waterside like view, I wanted to jump back and like see her there again. Cause she is the center of it, and that place like is the center of it all as well. Like a lot of the action takes place in that specific area. But what did you think about their like chemistry together, like the two as a dynamic?
I immediately just sort of like I don't know, I identified myself with Claude Mann's character. I think it's Claude Mann's character. So when I identified with him, I sort of also fell into this allure of Jean Moreau's character, and I'm like wrapped up in her, and I'm like, okay, let's see where this goes. And from that perspective, I guess that chemistry was just, it worked to draw me in very much into the relationship. But then as it sort of progresses through the movie, you're like, okay, maybe they're not together for some, you know, for love or whatnot. Maybe he's just a lucky charm to her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. But I feel like that chemistry where you sort of see that shift where like, oh, okay, so he's not really, there's not really like a real relationship here. He just sort of is like a lucky charm you bring into a casino to hope that you win. And I feel like I kind of got like fooled. I'm like, oh, never mind. This might not be as real as I thought it would be.
Totally. I was like really drawing a connection between that lucky charm part of the duo, because we see that across all of the films that we're going to talk about today. There's lots of like dynamic duos happening. Like we've got this common like mentor and protege thing going, and then we've also got like the straight man and the funny man. We'll talk about that with California Split. But then here we've got, that goes across the other films as well, like this idea of luck and like bringing someone in as part of like your luck in this risky game.
Yeah.
Which I think just ties into, like, I thought it was pretty funny, like, superstition and that type of thing. When, like, the entire thing, everyone knows
if you're like a physicist or whatever, like you're a mathematician, you know that it comes down to probability. But I think it adds like a funny dimension to bring in the idea of like having someone there next to you. And that also like builds the tension for these two, because unlike the other films that we're going to talk about, there's like this romantic level to gambling and like that lifestyle, and like being passionate for each other is like tied into the game as well, which was really, really cool to watch.
I what you were saying about the I guess the luck and then it coming down to I guess probability and all that, what was I gonna say? There's many shots in that movie where Jean Moreau's character and Cloud Man's character, they look away from the roulette spinning and they're like looking away just so they can be like, okay, let's see what happens. It's like there's a sense that, like, as you walk into the casino, that there's like a sense of mysticism that might work your way if you don't look. Like, it's like, okay, maybe there's this lucky ghost that floats in the casino, and if I look at the lucky ghost, then all my luck goes away. So maybe just turn away from the roulette.
Yeah.
Roulette spinning. I don't know.
And I love how they like put you into that perspective as well. Like, if those two characters aren't looking at the wheel, we don't get to see it.
Yeah,
like, we just see their faces, and that's part of like the suspense and the luck and like the superstition is how the style that they take on in this film comes into play through like the camera placement, and also the editing totally comes into your idea of like the mystical feeling.
Yeah.
Like all of these magical fades between their faces, like I loved it. It was such an excessive use of fading.
There's a lot of fading.
Overlaying their faces, but it's completely mesmerizing. Like, I think it does the trick of keeping this pace, fading between face to face to table to wheel, all with the sounds of like the clicks and clacks and the ticks of like the wheel.
Yeah,
definitely. Like, I feel like is a major part of making it so mystical and mesmerizing, and you can like feel how attracted they are to gambling because the movie itself is so attractive in that way.
Yeah, it looks very visually like it's everything just seems very like visually classy in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in this movie, it's like I don't know, like, I guess with the soundtrack and what you were mentioning, the chips and the clacks, and also how the person who gives the chips, he just lays it out, like, he just lays out the chips very, like, in a very classy manner. He's like, okay, here you go.
Yeah, it's so satisfying.
It's like, I don't know what it is. It's like everything feels random in a casino, but, like, they make it seem so ordered. So there's just this constant battle between this, like, classy orderliness, but everything beneath is just a crashing randomness. I don't know.
And I like that idea too, because that's what Jackie talks about, or Jackie's character talks about, when she's like, I'm not really appealed, like the money isn't what's appealing to me, it's like these highs and lows, like this going back and forth. She says something about like going back and forth between this idiotic life of luxury and poverty.
What a great line.
Such a great line. And it's not really about the money. It's just like the highs and lows of it all and the unknown. And I think that's what also like keeps us really focused during the movie, or at least for me, is they're going back and forth between winning and losing, and you don't really know what's going to happen next. And that like flip-flopping is really appealing. And I think that's kind of similar to what you were saying of like, in the casino, we're like broke when we walk in, but it could go either way. Like, we could come out with like this really classy, like glamorous feel after like a big win. And that's the appeal, like which way it could go. Like, it's two extremes instead of just like a steady, boring life, which is, I guess, like what he explains he's trying to escape at the beginning. He's like, oh, I'm done being this like mild, like, tempered man, like I'm off to like find some risk.
Yeah, even with Jean Moreau's character, she's like, oh, I kind of left my husband, and I think she mentioned a child as well, for for this life of gambling, and they're both trying to escape maybe this mundane, like this mundane life,
mm-hmm.
For this life of glamour. But also after that line where she mentions how life is a where like life becomes luxury and poverty in the casino. She also mentions how, I love this line too. She says how God rules over the numbers in the casino, and she really likes this like idea of divine chance about perhaps somehow, you know, there might be like, I don't know if there is like a, I guess a theistic reading of this movie, but you know, that she wants to feel like there's some control. This is a common theme between like this movie and especially Heart 8. She wants to feel like there's some, I guess, higher authority that has a sort of control over things so she can feel safe.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, oh, maybe there's like a God that rules over the numbers, and sometimes he makes it, like sometimes it's God makes it work my way, sometimes it doesn't, but there's a comfort in that, I guess.
Yeah. No, I like that idea, especially with like, obviously lots of people like turn to like a higher being as like part of community, like if you already have a community, but I think that that could tie in a lot with loneliness and how these are people who like she says, like she has nothing to lose because she's already like lost her family, yeah, or whatever. They don't really have anyone to turn to for support. So this idea that like someone's up there like looking over something somehow, yeah, could be comforting in the sense of like, okay, we're not alone. Like something bigger is going on and I'm just like a part of it. Like, yeah, I'm a part of something. Which is like really important for like someone who's lonely.
Yeah. And I guess you feel that you're a part of something most in this casino environment where you see everybody else,
mm-hmm,
I guess, submitting to this idea, this God of chance, I guess. I mean, like, okay, we're all worshiping this God of chance.
Yeah.
Together. And but it is very, I guess, bleak that it is a casino and they're all, you know, these problems aren't really solved. Are we allowed to talk about spoilers? Or I guess,
yeah, I'm okay. Really for spoilers.
Okay. Like we're, you know, the ending where she just walks out to chase Cloud Man's character, and you think it's a happy ending, but like I interpret it as like they're probably going to go back to the casino again. So it is.
Yeah.
There is this, I guess, this religious ecstasy that you can get lost in quite easily.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I don't know. Did you like that ending?
At first, I was thrown off by it. I was just like, wait, this feels kind of abrupt.
Uh-huh.
But as like I think about it more and more, I feel like it's very par for the course for the movie. It's sort of Jacques Demy saying, okay, we're going to quickly have her run and chase John. And it feels like this abruptness is like part of, it's Jacques Demy trying to say, yeah, it's not going to end here. There's going to be another abrupt turn probably where they're going to go back to the casino.
Because
it is very abrupt where you're going to be like, okay, let's go back to the casino. Okay, let's go back out. So I feel like it works after thinking about it.
I agree. I think I needed to think about it, and then I felt better reflecting on all of these things we've talked about already, of like the movie really emphasizes like cycles, like whether that's the cycle of loneliness, of like she thinks in this way that's like, oh, I don't owe anyone anything, I'm already alone, but that just like keeps going with the cycle. You'll never not be alone if you think that way. And by them, like, and then even if they're like winning and losing money, the cycle and going and going and going.
Yeah.
And then it just seems like, I don't know, I guess her leaving the casino on that final note marks for me the beginning of a new cycle.
Yeah.
And the end of like whatever just happened, which I don't think is a bad place to end, because like we imagine like what's going to happen next is probably the same that's already happened.
Mm-hmm. I also do really like that part in the ending where when you see her running out, there's like those mirrors on the side of the casino and you just see reflections of her running across those mirrors.
Yeah.
I just think that was really beautiful. I don't know.
It was a really nice shot because we see that, yeah, earlier on as well when he first gets to that casino, if I'm not wrong. Like he walks along those mirrors, but it's slower. Like,
yeah,
you see him just like kind of on the side going through one by one by one. But that final scene of, like, I don't know, the momentum is building and you see her flash across them really quite quickly. Yeah, I agree. It was a really nice spot. My favorite one of her lines, she's so iconic. Like,
I know, her outfits, and then the way she's, like, I think it was a, I don't know what a cigarette. She's just walking, and she's like walking in a very cool manner, and she's like smoking the cigarette, and I'm like, oh my god, this is perfect.
She's so cool. I mean, she has some hot takes for sure when she says like, I don't know anyone, anything, like, why deny myself any passion? Arguably, other people's feelings matter.
Yeah.
And you might want to deny yourself some pleasure.
Yeah.
That was a really iconic line. My other favorite one of hers was when she goes, she's on the beach, by the way. Mm-hmm. She's just on the beach. She goes, this display of flabby flesh makes me sick.
Oh, that line.
I'd rather watch people gambling. And then she just, like, marches off. She just really marches to the beat of her own drum. Yeah, and her outfits are so, like, glamorous.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Like, her lines are pretty spectacular. It's also, she was mentioning her friend and like, oh, like she owes me or something. And then I can't help but get the feeling that, you know, her husband sort of became a story. I think it was her friend that became a story. And now Cloud Man's character, he's also going to become a story to her in the future. It's like, oh yeah, there's this guy that came in and he was a lucky charm for a bit, but you know, we parted ways.
Oh, totally.
And it's like, okay.
People just come in and out.
Yeah.
And that should have been a red flag for him at the beginning. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't really care what happens to him, because if he's not catching the red flags, that's on him. And he also is a massive red flag as well.
Yeah.
He's like literally horrible and kind of crazy.
Yeah. Should have listened to his dad. I love how the movie starts out sort of like a anti-gambling PSA where his dad's like, you better not fall into gambling. It's like, don't do drugs, kids. I had a friend who did this, and he ended up badly. And if you do this, you're kicked out of my house. It's like, okay, this is.
Yeah, because what does his dad say? His dad's like, gamblers never win.
Yeah, gamblers never win.
Or gamblers always lose.
Yeah.
Same thing. Totally. And I think out of all the movies we're going to talk about today, it is a fun watch in terms of like the glamour, like capturing how casinos were marketed in this time, as glamorous, as classy. And I think part of that is like the music is super glamorous and classy as well. We've picked a couple songs that we could play today, but why don't we give a listen to the first one, which I think is like completely like so classy. It's, you're gonna hear it a million times if you watch the movie, because it kind of just plays over and over. It's called Le Jeu, and it kind of goes throughout.
Yeah.
I searched it up. It's je, or like le je, is the physical or mental activity whose essential goal is the pleasure it provides.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just like, well, no wonder they named the song that.
And with that song, it also makes you feel like you're losing track of time, which is perfect for like casinos where you want to sort of lose time and just exist in a place without time.
Totally. And ties into like the cyclical aspect of the film as well, because the song is very repetitive in itself, and then it plays over and over again as well. So let's give a listen. This is Le Jeu. Such a good one. I love that track. So that was from Bay of Angels, and the music was by, I don't know if I said this at the beginning, Michelle Legrand.
Yeah.
Michelle Legrand. I don't know how to make that more French. But that was kind of the one that repeats a lot throughout the film. Oh, I love it.
It's beautiful.
It's a really beautiful one. Well, let's move on to the next film about gambling that we're talking about today, is California Split. So this is, we're going in a nice chronological order. We're moving on to 1974, directed by Robert Altman. It's written by Joseph Walsh, and it stars George Segal and Elliot Gould as Charlie and Bill, or Bill and Charlie, in the way that I just said it. Simple plot, if you haven't heard it, it's about a casual gambler, Bill Denny, who befriends professional gambler, Charlie Walters, and then Bill begins to mirror Charlie's life, sinking deeper and deeper into the world of gambling, where the stakes keep getting bigger. I don't know, I got that from IMDb. Super dramatic. But I really like this one as well. I think it, like, contrasts Bay of Angels nicely, not showing, like, this glamorous side as much.
Yeah.
But also taking a new pivot on, like, these characters and not really playing in as much to the stereotypes of, like, underlying, like, selfishness and, like, kind of really bad people, like, abusively bad people that we see in Bay of Angels. And instead, it's, like, these guys, like, are not careless. Like, they care actually deeply about, like, family and friends and, like, more things than just themselves. So I thought that was, like, a nice addition that we don't really get out of Bay of Angels. That was my first reaction. What about you?
As soon as I saw it, right after it ended, I was like, yeah, that this is instantly one of my favorite movies of all time. I was so taken aback by this movie. I was like, wow, I love everything about this. It reminds me of, I just really like when there's two characters who have, like, a friendship at the center of a movie, and they're just, I guess they're just trekking around the city, or they're trekking around places and doing some things and just chilling out.
Yes.
I love those types of movies. They just hit the spot perfectly. Like Bay of Angels, the opening scene of this movie is just as perfect. I love the short film narration of this is how you play poker. It's just so perfect. And I think one part in the short film narration, it's like the goal of poker is to win the pot. And then Elliot Gould's character is like, hope I remember that. And then it's so funny. I just love how there's so many overlapping conversations in the beginning. You have that narration, and you have people talking in the casino. I feel like out of the three movies, this captures the vibe of the casino the best out of all three. Just like, you know, just you hear a lot of background chatter. You have to follow, I guess, the rules of the casino. You know, wait till your turn comes, I guess. And yeah, I guess that was my first reaction.
No, I totally agree. That definitely stood out to me as well, like the sound aspect of it and how it's very natural sounding with the overlaying voices. And then obviously Elliot Gould as Charlie, like his voice shines through in a lot of the times just because of like his comedic commentary, like throughout, like you want to like watch it back just so you can like catch some of his sarcastic, like snarky comments that are overlaid by so much other like chatter around the casino, which I think is really fun that you can go back and like catch a couple of the things. It sounds like he's improvising, which I think they did improvise some of like a lot of their like friendship dialogue. I was like looking into their relationship as actors and how they like, I don't know, got along well enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that shines through like in their duo chemistry.
Yeah, it definitely does feel improvised. I think, and if we're getting into filmmaking, I guess one of the best approaches to filmmaking would be this improvisational thing that some directors do with their actors. They're like, okay, we're just going to have a loose narrative structure, and the actors are very much a part of the process in creating, I guess, the lines and, you know, going through this narrative structure together and, I guess, playing with the narrative a bit. And I guess that's where my favorite movies come from, I guess. That's
Yeah. I really like that as well, especially with a movie, like you said, these ones where it's just following two characters going about, like, doing their thing. Once the foundations are laid for, like, okay, like we were saying, like, who's the straight man, who's the funny man, how would those interact with each other, it's cool to, like, feel like you're getting their take. And, of course, we don't actually know how much is, like, their take on this dynamic, but the fact that it has that effect, that you just feel like you're getting, like, the actor's take on what that relationship would look like, I think speaks for itself. I like also the idea of how this dynamic duo friendship, like, ties into the name of the movie, like, California Split.
Yeah.
Did you know what that meant before watching?
I did not.
Okay, so it means a high-low split game, from what I looked up, and it means that the pot is shared between the player with the highest and lowest hand.
Okay.
That's what Google told me.
So that makes sense. If they're splitting.
And I think the idea of, like, splitting this and, like, bringing in an aspect of, like, there's maybe two winners is really cool, because we see at the end of a lot of these movies, like, it comes down, like, at the end of the day, these games are a one-man win game, or no one wins, ultimately, morally, or, like, based on the fact that they're all, like, addicted. There is no winner. But the idea that, like, two people can win, I think, lays a nice foundation for this friendship, where, like, their friendship isn't even split, and they're playing off each other. Like, they're either being each other's lucky charm. They're going in on things together and betting on each other's luck as well, which we see a lot, like, at the end when William's character is playing for both of them, basically.
Yeah.
And that's what Charlie says when he's, like, sitting at the bar. Do you remember this scene? He's, like, sitting at the bar talking to the, like, lady bartender, and Bill has just, like, started playing, and she's like, oh, like, which seat are you taking, or, like, whatever, or someone's like, which seat, and he's like, that's me, the handsome guy right there, like, he's us.
Yeah.
Like, he's playing for us, which I think the title is so on point, or they're so on point in representing the title. Either which way, they've got great bromance chemistry.
Yeah, that bromance is what makes the movie work so much. You mentioned something about, like, morally, I guess it feels better that they're splitting this. And there's a line in Bay of Angels where one of the characters is like, oh, it feels so immoral to win this much money. And then I guess with California Split, now that it's split between two people, it might feel less immoral. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an interesting through line. It's like, I guess the more you share your winnings, it feels less immoral, but I definitely that buddy relationship they have, where it starts off where they're getting drunk together and, like, can you name all seven dwarves? And I was playing along with this, like, wait, do I remember all seven dwarves? And I'm like, I do not remember all seven dwarves. But it's I really liked their chemistry between Charlie and Bill in this movie.
Yeah. And I think they do a great job at, like, tying in, like, there's emotional aspects, like, tied into this world of gambling, apparently. Like, I'm not speaking from any sort of experience other than the fact that I'm watching them. And, yeah, it's just a game. Yeah, it's maybe about money, or, like, the high or the low, the addiction, whatever. But they've got a lot of, like, emotional investment as well. Like, we see that, I guess, like, a line that really stood out to me is when Charlie goes to play and doesn't tell Bill that, like, he's gone somewhere to play. And he comes back and Bill's, like, totally mad at him. He's like, where'd you go? I can't believe you didn't tell me. Whatever, whatever. And Charlie says, you weren't in the dream, William. Like, you weren't a part of it. At the end of the day, like, I had this dream that I had to go here and play this game, and in an instant, like, I would leave you here and not tell you. And that really, really upsets William, and he kind of, like, has this backlash. And for me, that really, like, tied in together how, like, a lot their friendship and, like, their kind of even, like, familial bond is, like, intertwined with, well, the foundation of their friendship is, like, rooted in playing the game.
Yeah.
And they can't really, like, separate those two things.
yeah, they're like the previous movie, like they act as, I guess they act as each other's lucky charm in a way. Mm-hmm. And there's this particularly great scene at the near the end of the film. I think they're playing one of the casino games, and Charlie comes over to William, and William's like, get out of here, get out of here. And then William loses, and then Charlie walks away, and then immediately there's music, and the music's like, why are you so mean to me? And it's like, it was perfect. And like, I think that just summarizes just how this friendship between them is just so, like, it's so beautiful. I don't know. I was like, this is the pinnacle of friendship, you know. But you, I guess you, like, you know, you fight, but it's not like, it's not taken to heart. But then, you know, you come back together and put your winnings together, and mm-hmm. you sort of act as one together.
I'm thinking about, like, a song that we want to play today is called Ace in the Hole, which, guys, I'm learning a lot about gambling references because I was like, what does that mean, an ace in the hole? Apparently, do you know?
I've heard of the term, but I think, no, I don't know.
Okay, Google says ace in the hole is basically, like, you have a significant advantage that, like, you keep hidden until you need it. It's like you've got an ace, like, in your hand, and, like, I don't know, maybe that's, like, very good in some games.
In poker, that's good.
Okay,
yeah,
perfect.
Yeah.
So you've got an ace, and, like, you obviously, like, use it at the best point. And it's kind of this, like, secret advantage that, like, comes through in the end, which I think they kind of are each other's ace.
In the hole, yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
So we can give a little listen to that. Like, it plays right after also, like, the most hilarious scene in the world, when there's, like, an attempted robbery.
Yeah.
And Charlie's character is going, I don't believe it, I don't believe it. And he basically, like, doesn't allow the robber to rob him, even though he's being held at gunpoint. And it's so epic. And then Ace in the Hole plays. So why don't we give a little listen to that, and we'll circle back to sure. a bit more on California Split after that. Here's Ace in the Hole. This is Bobby Darin singing.
This town is full of guys who think they're mighty wise just because they know a thing or two. You'll meet them night and day, strolling up and down Broadway, telling of the wonders they can do.
Oh, sing it, Bobby boy.
I just did.
There's con men and there's boosters.
There's card sharks and crap shooters.
They congregate around the metropole.
If I knew what that meant, I would agree with him. They wear flashy ties and collars.
Yes, but where do they get their dollars?
They all have got an ace down in the hole.
Yes, says some of them write to the old folks for coin. And that is their ace in the hole.
And others have friends on the old Tenderloin. That's their old ace in the hole.
Why, they'll tell you of trips that they're going to make, from Florida to the North Pole.
The fact is them.
All right, it's important to mention here, that was Ace in the Hole. Hope you enjoyed listening to that little tidbit. But a lot, or almost all of the songs, I'm pretty sure, in the film are sung by Phyllis Shotwell, who I couldn't find her actual recordings of the songs, so that's why I had to just, like, pick some different, like, artists' versions. But she's amazing. We eventually see her in the casino, like, in part of, like, the final scenes, and she's singing at the piano, which I think is really awesome that you hear her throughout. And I was like, who is that? I was literally, yeah, like, trying to Shazam her, and, like, I couldn't get it. And then we finally see the face and, like, match it to the voice, which was really cool.
She's the star of the movie.
Yeah. She deserves more recognition. But yeah, that was kind of at the end when we finally get to see her. And the end also has this, like, huge, spoiler, like, win involved.
Yeah.
But is it really a win? How did you feel about the ending?
William is, like, William has a bunch of chips, and he's basically bleeding chips. But he just sits there, just stares into the distance. Seems like he's in despair, and like I feel like you know, and I guess in a casino or maybe in anything in life, after you get a huge win, you can't help but feel like there's something missing, or there's just general unease that's bothering you, and it's like, okay, now what? And Charlie's like, yeah, we did this, but Charlie doesn't like be like, oh, you're just leaving me, I hate you. No, he's very like, okay, you know, this is how it ends, we'll part ways, and we'll just go our separate ways. And I thought that was a nice cap to the film.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, it is.
I feel like it hones in a little bit more, like, unlike Bay of Angels felt very like character focused on like their own like motivations, but here, like, at the end we realize, okay, this life is so glamorous at the high, but like the idea of gambling solving like major issues is not realistic. Like, at the end of the day, everything else is still gonna be going on, and gambling is still just like commodifying taking risks and stuff like that, which I think was nice to have, like, that, like, a broader overall aspect at the end.
Yeah,
I really liked the end scene when they're at, I don't know really what they're playing, I think they're playing like craps or something.
I think it's called craps. Yeah.
And we're getting so many cool angles, like it feels like you're in the table at some point, you're getting like from over the shoulder shots, which this is happening throughout the whole film, like you're at these round tables, you're getting over the shoulder from all over the place. Sometimes it feels like you're in the table, you're getting like over the top views, and then they come out and you get a really far away view from like the crowd around the table, which I really liked. Like, it made you feel like you're in the casino, or like you're in the room, unlike some of, like, I don't know, like these shots in Heart 8, like we're in a diner or something, like these very typical sets where it's a diner or a living room and everyone's kind of like positioned to face like a certain direction. It feels like a little bit more staged, which a diner like is a great spot. Like, I'm not saying that's bad or anything, but it was cool to be at these round tables and get all these angles and them not to shy away from that. Like, they're not just showing like, oh yeah, an angle from the right side of Charlie's face. That's what stood out to me at the ending.
Definitely. The camera work in the film is great. Like you mentioned, the angles, but also the slow zooms that Altman does.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm a huge fan of those slow zooms where it's like very slowly going into a character and then going out. I think it just works with the whole naturalistic feel of the film.
Yeah. I think Heart 8 like doesn't shy away too much from this. So Heart 8 is like the final movie that we've kind of put into this trio. By the way, there are so many awesome gambling movies that I've discovered, and I wish we could have like talked about them all, because I was like literally finding out of more through this. Like, Philip Seymour Hoffman has a cameo like in Heart 8, and then he goes on to like star as a gambler in this like Canadian gambling movie called Owning Mahoney, and I was reading about that, and it's like tells the story of the largest one-man bank fraud in Canadian history, and I was like, oh, that sounds so good too.
Wow.
We might have to do a part two of this episode because there's a lot going on. But Heart 8, this was like Paul Thomas Anderson's debut, like this was like the start of it all. And it's got a crazy cast. It's got Philip Baker Hall, John C. Reilly, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Samuel L. Jackson. And basically it's this similar protege-mentor dynamic going on between the main two characters, Sydney and John.
Yeah. PTA made this at 24, which makes me have an existential crisis.
Oh God, don't tell me that. But I really, really liked it. I mean, I think, again, it adds this new layer, not to, like, always be comparing them, but it's nice to put them into conversation, like, these three movies into conversation with each other. Of it adds this new layer of, like, we've got plot that we do not know about, and we, like, hardly even know about it by the end. Like, these characters, like, gambling doesn't feel like the center of it, yeah. If you know what I mean. But it is part of it. It's still, like, a gambling movie.
This film is, like, the one film out of the three that were, I guess the gambling aspect feels more on the side rather than what it revolves around.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about Sydney and this... He's almost like a mythical authority figure. And what I was thinking about with this film a lot was like, and this is a common theme through PTA's works, is I guess this need that, I guess there might be a need, or maybe this need's been conditioned in us to have an authority figure to tell us what to do, where we constantly seek an authority figure to tell us where to go, what to do, how to solve issues, how to solve problems, because it feels comfortable, but then it makes you question, why do we need such a figure, and where does this need come from?
Mm, totally. And I think, yeah, the Philip Baker Hall's performance as Sydney, like, is just amazing to represent all of those ideas you just talked about. It was supposed to be called Sydney, the movie.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I kind of wish it was.
It is his movie, it feels like. It's like, I thought it was going to focus on John C. Reilly, but, like, is very much just about Sydney.
Mm-hmm. But their relationship was still really important in this kind of teaching, but again, like, by the end, like, we see the teaching is not in, like, a friendship way. The teaching is kind of, yeah, like, guiding figure way.
Yeah.
Which is cool to bring in into this little mini genre or whatever to contrast the friendships that we had in California Split. Also has a pretty cool soundtrack as well. We're not going to play anything from it because we've got to go. But we'll see you next week on The Real World. And, yeah, I would definitely give a listen to the soundtrack. I really liked Love is Free by Brenton Wood. Some great music. And honestly, all the films. I'm pretty pleased with the musical selection for this week's show. I'm glad we got to play you guys even two. But, yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show, Gurjot.
Yeah, it's lovely.
We hope you come back again soon. The Real World is on from 4 to 5 every Wednesday. Who knows, maybe there'll be a Gambling Movies Part 2 coming your way in the future. All right, thank you for listening.
Thank you.